No, I didn't forget any announcements. But I am preaching tonight, and thank you to our regular evangelist for giving me a time to do that. In talking and thinking about what I want to talk about tonight, I have a list on my phone of sermon ideas. Some of them will probably never be done. But all the ones I was looking at, I was like, man, I like all of these. But I was talking with my sister, and one of the greatest things about growing up is my sister and I can stand each other now. So we had a great conversation, as we often do. And so if you don't like the sermon tonight, blame her. It was her idea. You can still throw your siblings under the bus. It's great. Seriously, though, we're going to talk about some things that are hard, that are confronting, and that will probably step on toes. And I know that because they were hard, confronting, and stepped on my own toes. So please do not hear what we talk about tonight and write it off as, I hate to say this, my opinion. Please at least consider it. Please also know that I love you, that I've had to change my thoughts on some things, certainly, and that I'm perfectly willing and wanting to talk about these things after I'm done talking tonight. That doesn't mean the conversation has to be over. We can keep talking about them and conversing about them. And if we need to, we'll pray together about them and open God's Word and study about them. I want to do that. I want to do that with you. So tonight, we're going to talk about idols. Not Baal, not Molech. What do we often think about when we talk about idols? What's the first thing that probably comes to mind? If we're talking about a modern idol, what's the thing you think about? You might, somebody say football? All right, come on, Steelers are playing tonight. What are you doing? No. It's in your wallet. Used to it was in paper form. Now it's on a card. We're not talking about that either. We're going to talk about some things that you might not think of as idols. At first, I wouldn't have thought of them as idols, but the more and more I've thought about it and studied about it, I think they definitely can be. And I want you to also know this isn't an exhaustive list. Just like we have different temptations in our lives, different things that we struggle with, we also have different strengths. There may be different things in your life that aren't an idol for me, or there may be things in my life that you've never even had to worry about. You've never given half a thought because you didn't need to. But I think these are some things that we see predominantly in our culture. And as we know from the Bible, and as we know from our own lives, the culture we're in, very quickly and very often and very easily, can get into our church culture, our spiritual culture. So I want to ask you a question. I'm not starting a political discussion, but I want to ask you a question. When you hear on the news of a mass shooting, and we live in the U.S., unfortunately it happens way too often. When you hear on the news that there's been a mass shooting, particularly a terrible one, Sandy Hook, Aurora, Virginia Tech, you know, even closer to home, that Amish schoolhouse in Lancaster County a few years ago. What often happens after one of those? Gun sales go up. Why? Why do people, after there's been such a terrible tragedy, feel the need to buy a gun? They're scared. They feel insecure. The security that they had has been threatened. It's been shaken. So they need to do something to make themselves feel safe. I'm not saying that you should never have a gun. I have more than my wife wishes. I'll go ahead and tell you that. I like everything about them. I went hunting with my father-in-law Friday. I love that. But why do people feel the need to strengthen their security? It's been shaken. If you want to know what the idols are in your life, what is the thing that you get the most scared or the most angry when it's touched? You know, every kid has a favorite toy, and isn't that the one that they get the most angry about when another kid plays with it? You know, my brother and I knew if we wanted to irritate each other, and I say this, it's not like we were trying to do this all the time. I knew the objects he didn't want me to play with or touch, And he sure knew what I didn't want him to touch. And so if we wanted to irritate each other, what did we do? We'd go play with that object. Sometimes our security can be our idol. Think about that. Why? Is security a bad thing? No. I locked. You guys know we're still dog-sitting my brother and sister-in-law's dog. Why is he in a crate right now? I'm protecting the rest of my house from that dog because he has no supervision and no sense. So I secure him away to protect my house, my belongings, my possessions. Y'all locked your car when you came in? Maybe some of you did, maybe some of you didn't. Is your house locked? Things like that. That's not a bad thing. Security can be a good thing. We have lights around the outside of the building for that purpose. But can that become our idol? And I think certainly it can. Why is that something that maybe our culture and, by extension, we can struggle with? It's because we have a safe life. You think about it. We have a pretty secure life. Throughout most of history, God's people haven't. And one of the reasons why is God sometimes calls his people to do some things that aren't the safe thing. They're not the secure thing. So think about this. Jonah. What did God tell Jonah to do? We talked about him a little bit this morning. Jonah, I want you to go from your nation, your home, your people, and you're going to go to another nation, another people. How's Jonah feel about that? Not thrilled. Why? The Assyrians weren't great people. There's a reason why Jonah's being sent to them. God's going to destroy them because they're terrible. They were brutal people. They destroyed other nations and took them into captivity or slaughtered them. They were a terrible people. So God says, Jonah, go from safety to people that want to kill you. And guess what you're going to do when you get there? Tell them that they're going to be destroyed. Is that a safe thing? Not my idea of a safe thing. What about Paul? Was Paul ever in a place that wasn't very secure? Sometimes he was in places that were extremely secure. He was in prisons. It wasn't his choice, but he was there. Sometimes he was in prisons after being beaten. Sometimes he spent the night floating out in the ocean after a shipwreck. And we're going to talk why about here in a few minutes. What about Abraham? Abraham, I want you to go from your country, your home, to a land that I will show you. Doesn't give him a name. Doesn't tell him really anything about it. But you're going to leave what you have, what you know, and you're going to go to something you don't. That's inherently insecure. Knowledge is security. And God says, I'm taking you away from that. Then, Abraham, I'm going to bless the world through you. And, of course, Abraham struggles with how that's going to happen. Finally, he has a son. All right, Abraham, go sacrifice him. Really? You want me to sacrifice your promise? You think that shook Abraham a little bit? You think it shook Abraham when they're nearing the place and Isaac goes, we have the wood, we have the fire, where's the lamb? And Abraham goes in his head, I'm sure, how do I explain that to him? What about Jacob? You know, sometimes when we're young, we like to do things that are a little bit risky. If you turn on a rodeo, most of those guys are below the age of 40. Let's be honest, most of them are below the age of 30. Why? Well, two reasons. They get too banged up to do it very long. And when we get older, you might say we get wiser. You might say we get more cautious. But there's less and less reason that we want to look at a bull and go, I'm going to ride that. We get cautious. We get safe. We don't want to change things. There aren't very many elderly people skydiving. You hear of a few of them, and that's why it's remarkable. There's not many. But God tells Jacob, Jacob, I know this is the land that you've been promised, that your fathers have been promised, but I'm going to send you to Egypt. You're going to go with Joseph. You're going to die there. Imagine that. You're an old man. And God says, you're going to go somewhere else. You're going to go to a country that's not yours. You're going to go to a country and never come home, at least not while you're alive. Would that be hard? Absolutely. We're going to talk about this more towards the end. What about Jesus? I feel like if you're looking in the Bible for an example, if you want to be really, frankly, lazy, look at Jesus. Because he's an example of almost everything. You know, Abraham was sent from a country that he knew to another one. Jonah was sent to a dangerous place. Jacob was told, you're going to go die in Egypt. What did Jesus leave? Jesus left heaven, the most secure place, to come to earth. And we're going to talk about that some more. So our security, and like we said, our feeling of security is directly proportional to our feeling of control. And sometimes maybe people have a broader idol, and that is control. You see people that act out in anger, act out in fear when they feel control slipping away? Have you ever seen that kid that's a bully and tries to force his will on other people? Normally that's the kid that's the least secure in themselves. That probably has a rough family background. And so they try to control the one thing that they can, and that's smaller people, normally. Sometimes you see that in a boss. I've seen that in soccer coaches. It's like, you're an AYSO coach. Why are you being a jerk to some kids? But they're controlling. I used to work for the domestic relations office. If you see them hiring, I don't recommend it. Why were there so many problems there? Because so many clients get into a relationship, and it can go both ways. One party tries to control the other party. And even after that relationship breaks up, they still try to control each other through money, through legal action. And we basically had to play referee for all of that. People like to feel control, to feel like they're in control. And then the one that is really going to confront us, and it confronts me, that we're going to talk about for the rest of tonight. In America, we have a lot of unique opportunities and aspects to our life. One of the documents that we had to study, actually a couple times when I was growing up in school, particularly in high school, was a constitution. What does a constitution do? It outlines rights. It outlines how the country is going to operate. But I want you to think. Take yourself out of an American mindset. Take yourself out of America as a whole. Have God's people physically ever had many rights? Most of them. Some did. But throughout history, you think about how life was. You might be a slave. You might be a free man. Maybe you're a craftsman or a farmer. Odds are, if you're farming, you might be doing something called sharecropping, where you owe a portion of what you grow to the man that actually owns the ground. If you don't, every April 15th, what do? Well, hopefully before that, taxes. We have systems to set up for taxes, tax codes. I'm not getting into how good or bad they are, but we have a code. Throughout history, someone could say, you're paying this much in taxes, and there was nothing you could do about it. And if you didn't have the money, sorry. They take your property. They take your family. Put you in prison or slavery. So you pay it off. And how are you going to pay that off when you're in slavery? It was a rough, rough life for most people. There's a podcast I listen to, and I'll readily admit, I'm a history nerd. There's a podcast I listen to on Spotify about the history of piracy. You know why most of those men and some women turned to piracy? Because they were hopeless. They couldn't hardly live on land. Maybe they went to sea on merchant ships or fishing ships. They were hardly paid. The life was terrible. And I'm not talking about the morality of it, but through desperation, they turned to stealing, to robbing, sometimes to killing, because they were so desperate. And you think, it's easy to say, I would never do that. But like the children of Israel, when they complained, what if you know you have a family back home who's starving, who has nowhere to live, who's dying, who's in slavery? That might make you think about doing some desperate things. But we don't have to do that, because we live here, and we're blessed, and I'm so thankful. I hope you know this. I'm so thankful to be here, to be an American. But can our rights become an idol? Yes, they can. And I think sometimes it slips in and we don't even notice it. Sometimes we think of an idol as something that we worship. And that's certainly true. I mean, when the Israelites were worshiping Baal, they were bowing to Baal. They were offering sacrifices to Baal. Same to Molech. Molech had the additional horror that some of his sacrifices weren't sheep and goats. They were live humans. How barbaric. But I think sometimes we need to broaden that view of what an idol is. When we worship God, is that all we do? Is that the only thing we do with God? No. Do we not take comfort from God? Do we not have, as we talked about before, security? Do we not, when we're scared or when we don't know what to do, when life seems big, look at Psalms, do we not go to God? We should do that. All of that's right. But sometimes we do those things to something that's not God, that becomes our God. And I think this is where rights come into it. Like I said, Friday night, I was hunting with my father-in-law. Other times, you know, my brother and I, we go target shooting. I love guns. I love the history, the engineering, the artistry that goes into them. I have some that have sentimental value. I have some that have some financial value to them. But I was talking with a friend in college. I say friend loosely. I didn't really like the guy at all. But anyway, so we were talking at lunch, and we were just talking about different countries and places we might like to visit. And I mentioned that my aunt and uncle live in Australia. And he goes, I never live in Australia. And I said, why, you afraid of sharks? He goes, nope, you can't have guns. I said, well, it's not entirely true, you can. It's harder than the U.S., certainly, but you can. I said, yeah, I understand that. I said, they're there preaching. He goes, doesn't matter. I wouldn't go to Australia. I'm like, wait a minute. If you had the opportunity to preach, you wouldn't go because you can't have guns with you? And he's like, yep. Just that simple. Brethren, I hope there isn't any object in this life, any person in this life, that when we meet our Maker someday, that we would say, this was more valuable to me than trying to win souls. I hope and I pray that's not us. There isn't an object in this life valuable enough to make it worthwhile to say that. Another right that we have, the ability to choose our own leaders. Have you thought of that? That we get to choose, we get to vote, we get to have a say. That's never really happened throughout most of history. There's a few little maybe cities that you could do that. In Athens, sometimes they could elect leaders a little bit, but not really. And there were huge restrictions. You had to be a male. You had to own land. Most people couldn't. But we can. And that's amazing. What if that was taken away? What if that was taken away? Okay. You know what? And I'm not saying don't vote. I do. I've even thought about running for a very local political office. I'm not saying don't use that right, but what if that right was gone? Does that have any effect on your spiritual life? It shouldn't. Think about in the first century. Think about what Paul says, what Jesus says. Give honor to Caesar. That's easy to say, but think what Caesar was. Think what Caesar did. Who was Caesar at the time? Nero. There's a reason when TJ and Jonathan have their kid, if it's a boy, they're probably not naming him Nero. He was a horrible person, a horrible Caesar. He burned Christians in his garden to light his garden. He burned part of the city down to build it the way he wanted it. He was horrible. But God said, follow him. On the flip side, when we do follow God, there's rights that we're given. Think about it. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. You were enemies. You were sinners. But you've been justified. The Bible talks about that we're adopted. What does that mean? You're adopted. Now, I have a great family. I have both parents that serve God. But I've had friends that didn't. I've had friends whose parents were horrible, were abusive physically, sexually, mentally, every possible way. They were taken out of that. They were adopted. What does that mean? It means they have a right to a home. They have the rights that come with the name that they now carry. Think about the name that as Christians we carry. You know, when I wear a uniform for the fire department, it says Biglerville Fire Department on the back. That identifies me. That tells people what group, what company I belong to. When you wear the name of Christ, imagine having the name of Christ on your back. You belong to Christ. And then God says, not only are you sons, but what? Heirs. You have the right of inheritance. You go from being an enemy to I get to inherit God, really. I get to inherit heaven. That's amazing. But then we're given those rights, but sometimes we have to sacrifice rights on this world. Turn with me. We're going to look at 1 Corinthians 8 and 9. They're not very long chapters. But in 1 Corinthians 8 and 9, Paul is talking to the Corinthian church. And the Corinthian church, frankly, they were a bit of a mess. They didn't quite often get it right. They often, well, not often. We don't have an amount of times this was happening. But we know that they were suing one another. Some were starving. Others were drunk. They were abusing the Lord's Supper. They wanted spiritual gifts, speaking in tongues, the impressive things. And Paul says, y'all don't need spiritual gifts. You need the love. That's what you need. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, Paul talks about some things. So I want us to look at this. We're going to start in 1 Corinthians 8 and verse 1. 1 Corinthians 8 verse 1. That's 2 Corinthians. I knew that didn't look right. There we are. Now, concerning food offered to idols, we know that all of us possess knowledge. This knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. If anyone imagines that he knows something, he does not yet know as he ought to know. But if anyone loves God, he's known by God. Therefore, as to the eating of food offered to idols, we know that an idol has no real existence and that there's no God but one. For although there may be so-called gods in heaven or on earth, as indeed there are many gods and many lords, yet for us there is one God, the Father, from whom all things and from whom are all things and for whom we exist, and one Lord Jesus Christ, through whom all things are and all things exist. Excuse me. Through whom are all things and through whom we exist. So think about this. Clearly they've written to Paul and talked about it, brought up the topic of Paul. We know there aren't other gods. We know there's only one God. Why can't I go to a feast at the idol's temple? I know that's not the God. That's not a God. That's not the God. It's just food. And Paul basically says, yeah, you're right. It is. You're right that it's not just God. But look what he says. Continue on. In verse 7. However, not all... However, not all possess this knowledge, but some, through former association with idols, eat food as really offered to an idol, and their conscience, being weak, is defiled. Food will not commend us to God. We are no worse off if we do not eat, no better off if we do. But take care that this right of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. For if anyone sees you who have knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will he not be encouraged? For if anyone sees you who have knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will he not be encouraged, if his conscience is weak, to eat food offered to idols? And so by your knowledge, this weak person is destroyed, and the brother for whom Christ died. Thus sinning against your brothers and wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food makes my brother to stumble, I will never eat meat lest I make my brother stumble. So think about this. He says, yeah, okay, you have knowledge, and in my Bible, I like it has literally in quotes, knowledge that that's not a God. You have knowledge this is just food, but what's the problem? What's he say? But what about your brothers? What about your brothers who former association with idol worship are led back to that? And I love how he says, are destroyed. And then you've destroyed your brother, as he points out, that Christ died for. And at the very end, what does he say? Let's just read it again. Therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never eat meat lest I make my brother stumble. So what is he saying? Is it wrong to eat meat? Obviously not. I don't know if Paul chose to keep the Jewish diet or if he didn't. I don't know. There's nothing wrong with meat. But Paul says, I will go above and beyond. Forget the idol temples. I won't eat meat at all if it makes my brother stumble. Brethren, that's the attitude that God calls us to have. So if we have to sacrifice our rights for our brethren, so be it. Does that mean it won't be inconvenient for us? No, it will. Does that mean we might lose out on things that we like? Maybe. But what's more important, my rights or my brother? Let's look on a little bit. In chapter 9, Paul's going to sacrifice some more rights. We're going to read chapter 9 and 1 through... I forgot to write that down. Just read with me. We might stop a couple times here. We're not going to read the whole chapter. Don't worry. Chapter 9 and verse 1. Am I not free? Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? Are not you my workmanship in the Lord? If to others I am not an apostle, at least I am to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord. This is my defense to those who would examine me. Do we not have the right to eat and drink? Do we not have the right to take along a believing wife, as do the other apostles and the brothers of the Lord and Cephas? Or is it only Barnabas and I who have no right to refrain from working for a living? Who serves as a soldier for his own expense? Who plants a vineyard without eating any of its fruits? Or who tends a flock without getting some of the milk? Do I say these things on human authority? Does not the law say the same? For it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain. Is it for oxen that God is concerned? Does he not certainly speak for our sake? It was written for our sake, because the plowman should plow in hope, and the thrasher thresh in hope of sharing in the crop. If we have sown spiritual things among you, is it too much if we reap material things from you? If others share this rightful claim on you, do we not even more? Nevertheless, we have not made use of this right, but we endure anything rather than put an obstacle in the way of the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that those who are employed in the temple service get their food from the temple? Those who serve at the altar share in the sacrificial offerings? In the same way, the Lord commanded that those who proclaim the gospel should get their living by the gospel. But I made no use of any of these rights, nor am I writing these things to secure any such provision. For I would rather die than have anyone deprive me of my ground for boasting. For if I preach the gospel, that gives me no ground for boasting, for necessity is laid upon me. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this of my own will, I will have a reward. But if not of my own will, I'm still entrusted with a stewardship. What then is my reward? That in my preaching I may present the gospel free of charge so as not to make full use of my right, so as not to make full use of my right in the gospel. For though I'm free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews I became a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. All right, we're going to stop there. So what does Paul say? He's got several rights that he brings up. He has the right to be financially supported, or materially supported at least. He has the right to marry. He has other rights. And what does he say? But I'm not doing those. Sorry, my notes decided to turn off. Why does he do this? Let's ask the why question. You know, I can show you verses after verse, but why? Why does Paul say, I have this right, but I'm not going to do it? What is Paul's interest? Is it in his financial gain? Is it in the joys that being married bring, even though he can do all those things? No. What's Paul looking to do? What's he say? To the Jews, he became a Jew to add more Jews. To those outside, he became like those outside to add them. Paul's looking to add souls. Is that not our job? Why are we here? Obviously to serve God, but what does God tell us to do? To make souls. To win souls. So what that means is that we might have to sacrifice some rights and privileges that we have. You know, when he says, I went to the Jews, I went to those outside, maybe that means we have to go to people, we have to go to places that don't have the same rights we do. And when we're there, good luck saying, I'm an American, I have these rights. They're going to say, well, then go back to America. Watch that. They don't care about your rights other places. They have their laws. They have their maybe rights. We talk about people that we support in different places. I know people in Africa, people that have gone to China. You know the rights they have when they're there? Not much. But they still do it. And they're still our brothers and sisters that live there, that stay there, that live under that. I hope one day we're not embarrassed. I don't think heaven works this way, but when you go to heaven, you talk about sufferings that you go through, and they go, yeah, my family was sent to a work camp, and you go, I didn't get the job I wanted. Well, okay. But anyway, I want us to think very practically, and you guys know me. I can't talk if there's not practical parts of this. So giving up rights, what does that mean? Maybe that means politically our country doesn't look the way we want it to look. Maybe that means someday I have to turn in some of those guns that I like. Okay. I want to get it very practical, and I'm not trying to just stir things up, but I want us to think. I'm happy to talk to you about this. I really am. What happened in 2020? A lot. But the COVID pandemic happened. It was terrible. It was hard. Regardless of what you think about it, life changed. It was scary. That feeling of security that we had was shaken. What did you see people do? You saw people get angry. You saw people fight amongst each other. Sometimes literally. Thankfully not here. But sometimes literally. There was anger. There was rage. There was fear. People tried to control. Brethren, like I said, I love you, and I want to talk about this. Please don't write off what I'm about to say. It scares me how angry people got about a little piece of fabric with two little cords that go over your ears. Sometimes people got very angry because they wanted masking and other people weren't masking, and how dare they be so inconsiderate. And then some people got angry because, no, masking isn't necessary, and why should I have to do something I don't want to do? But brethren, we have to rise above that. Regardless of what you think about it, if I have a brother or a sister in Christ that is scared, that is worried about their health, maybe they have other problems, and they want me to mask up around them, I'm not going to let a little piece of fabric come between me and my brother. And I hope you won't either. On the flip side, when I did think, hey, a mask is the way to go, we got to do everything we can, does that mean that I get to act rudely? Or that I get to act out in anger towards brethren that don't agree with me? No, I don't. They're still our brothers. Did the world see how we acted in COVID? Yes, they did. How did we do? That's for you to answer. I don't know. I wanted to talk about that. And like I said, I hope you know. I'm not just trying to stir up anger. I'm not trying to stir up old hurts and rip scabs off of old wounds. But it's something to think about. It's something for us to consider. How did we act? How did we feel? Maybe we didn't even act out verbally. But how did I feel? How did I think towards my brethren? Was it charitable? Or was it angry and controlling because I was scared and I felt like they somehow interrupted or took away some of my rights? All right. All this being said, regardless of what your idol is, maybe it's your rights, maybe it's your security, maybe it's something we haven't even talked about at all, we haven't touched on. There's plenty of other options. I had about four other things I was going to talk about, and just for time's sake, I don't have time. It's hard to give up something that we hold on to, that we love. Is it hard to give up an idol? It absolutely is. But one of the things I want us to remember, when we have to give something up as a Christian, we talked about it a little bit before, but we're coming back to it. Look at Jesus. Did Jesus have to give up anything? He 100% did. Christ considered others before himself. And if anybody has the right, and I say that intentionally, to not do that, it's God. He's God. There isn't anybody above him. There isn't anybody even equal to him. So if he wanted to consider himself above everyone, where he is, that would be okay. But he didn't. Christ considered others. Christ sacrificed his rights. Think about that. How was he born? Have you ever seen a king born that way? I haven't. I mean, think about all the ceremony, the just procedures that go on whenever there's a new king. Think about, again, I'm not trying to get division started, but think about when there's like a new pope, just the pageantry that goes on because there's a change, there's someone new. God gave up his right to be celebrated. God gave up his right to be comfortable. He talks about that. He doesn't even have a house. He doesn't have a place to lay his head. That's God talking and saying that. When you think about it that way, that sounds amazing. Then he sacrificed not just his rights. He sacrificed himself. God. Not the thing that something was sacrificed to. He was the sacrifice. And he calls us to do the same. Brethren, if there is anything that stands between you and God, or between your ability to win souls for God, or to strengthen souls for God, I beg you, think carefully. Think about, is this my idol? If that idol were to go away, or that item, that person maybe, were to go away, would that shake your relationship with God? Would that shake your relationship with your brethren? I hope and pray it doesn't. All right. I never have ended right at 6, so that was cool. This wasn't really a sermon to bring people to God. And I think sometimes we get the idea in our head, though it's never said, and rightly so, we get the idea that the best time to become a Christian is when somebody says, stand and sing. That's not true. The best time is any time. My brother was baptized about 8 or 9 o'clock on a Sunday night. I was baptized, I think, on a Friday. I don't remember exactly. God has had children added to him in the middle of the night. You think about the Philippian jailer. He was asleep one moment. He wakes up. He thinks the prisoners are gone, and he asks a question, probably thinking about his own physical life. He says, what should I do? And Paul talks to him and studies with him and teaches him. That night, he and his household are added. So if you're thinking about becoming a Christian and following God, don't wait for any particular time. Just do it. Just start. Maybe you've realized, as I have at various times, I'll be very frank about that, I have, that there are things that are standing between you and God. There are things that you hold in that clenched fist that you don't want to give up. Brethren, let go of that. Remember what God has promised you. He's promised you heaven. There's nothing on this earth worth hanging on to that tight. Let go of it. Let go of it and walk with God. If there's any way we can help you, if we can pray with you, we can baptize you.